This episode of The Deep Dive is brought to you by Wadadley Solar LLC, making sure your solar investment actually pays you back.
Okay, let's unpack something that I think is keeping a lot of people up at night. We see the headlines constantly. The robots are coming.
AI is going to take your job.
Exactly. And usually when we talk about that anxiety, we have a very specific picture in our heads. We picture the copywriter or, you know, the coder, the customer service agent, the laptop class.
Right. The narrative is that the digital jobs are the vulnerable ones. And the counter narrative has always been, well, at least the trades are safe.
That's it. The assumption is that you can't automate a plumber. You can't automate the guy climbing a ladder to fix a roof. It requires dirty boots.
It's the last bastion of human necessity.
But today, we're looking at a stack of research that challenges that safety, but, and this is the twist, it completely flips the script on how we should view AI in the physical world.
It really does. We are diving deep into the world of commercial solar operations and maintenance, or O&M for short.
O&M, right.
And specifically, we're looking at some amazing field notes and methodologies from Alexis Lewis, who is a specialist in this space based out of New York City.
And just to set the scale here, we are not talking about the six panels on my neighbor's garage.
No, not at all. We are talking about utility scale infrastructure. Massive arrays on top of distribution centers, factories, schools. I mean, acres of glass and silicon. This is high voltage, high stakes stuff.
And the core thesis we're exploring today, I think, is that in this industry, AI isn't the replacement. It's the connector. Now, I want to dig into that because usually AI is sold as the doer.
Right. It writes the email. It generates the image.
Yeah. But here we're talking about AI as a bridge between the human and the hardware.
Precisely. The mission for this deep dive is to really understand what a modern solar audit actually looks like. Because I think there's this misconception that solar is a passive technology, you know, set it and forget it.
I'll admit, that was my assumption. You bolt the panel to the roof, sun hits it, meter spins, you go home. Maybe, I don't know, wash it once a year with a hose.
If only it were that simple. We're going to see why dashboards, those pretty graphs that corporate types love to put on screens in the lobby, are often totally useless without physical context.
It's about grounding digital data in physical reality.
Grounding. I see what you did there.
Yeah. Had to.
I try.
So let's go up on the roof. Set the scene for me. If I'm a technician doing a solar audit on some massive distribution center, what am I actually dealing with? Because in my head, I'm just walking around looking for like cracked glass or maybe a loose wire.
And that's the snapshot view. And sure, a visual inspection is part of it, but a modern commercial solar system is a beast. Alexis Lewis describes it as a symphony of signals.
A symphony of signals.
Yeah.
It sounds poetic, but in engineering terms, that usually just means a lot of noise.
Massive amounts of noise. And this is where we need to look at the list, the stack of data sources that are involved in a single audit, because you can't really appreciate the problem until you hear the sheer volume of variables involved here.
Okay, lay it on me. What's in the stack?
Well, start with safety. Before you even care about power production, you care about not dying and not burning the building down. So you have insulation resistance tests and ground resistance tests.
Okay, just to clarify for the non-engineers, what are we actually testing there?
We're testing the integrity of the wire insulation. Are the electrons staying inside the copper where they belong, or are they, you know, leaking out into the racking, the roof?
Or a person.
Or a person, yeah. If that insulation resistance is low, you have a ground fault. In a commercial system, that's incredibly dangerous.
Okay, so step one, confirm the electricity is staying in the wires.
Step two is the visual thermal spectrum. We are pulling IR infrared imagery. And this has evolved so much. We aren't just walking around with a camera anymore. We're talking about drone scans flying automated patterns over the array to spot thermal anomalies.
Thermal anomalies, so hotspots.
Right. In solar, heat is usually a sign of failure. A cell that isn't converting light into electricity often turns into, well, a resistor. It blocks the flow. It heats up. So you have drones looking for glowing cells, but you also have technicians with handheld scanners opening up electrical cabinets. They're looking at the breakers, the heavy copper connections.
Because a loose wire gets hot?
Exactly. A loose connection creates resistance. Resistance creates heat. Heat creates fire. So you're scanning for that. But that's just the health check. Now you get into the actual performance data.
Right. This is where we measure if we're actually making money.
And this is where it gets really complicated. You need the weather history. But it's not just, was it sunny? You need granular data to build an expected production model. You need to know what the system should have done, theoretically.
So you're building a baseline.
Then you have the physics of the array itself. Yeah. You're looking at DC side string behavior. That's the raw power coming off the panels.
Okay.
Combined with AC side production, what's actually hitting the grid after the inverter converts it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to monitor the conversion efficiency at every single step.
And is it fair to say there's loss at every step?
Always. Physics demands a toll. But you need to know if the loss is normal physics or if it's a broken component. To do that, you need temperature data. You have module temperature probes stuck to the back of the panels and ambient temperature probes measuring the air.
Why does the temperature of the panel matter so much? Does it really change the output that much?
Hugely. Solar panels actually hate heat. It's ironic, right? They need sun, but heat just kills their efficiency. A hot panel produces significantly less voltage than a cool one.
So if you see the power drop, you need to know, is it a cloud? Or is it just because it's 95 degrees out?
Or is it dropping because something is broken?
Right.
And to differentiate that, you are pulling data from the heavy machinery, the inverters. And we're usually doing this via a protocol called RS-485.
RS-485. I've heard that term. It sounds vintage.
It is industrial. It's the workhorse of automation. It's a serial communication standard. It's not Wi-Fi. It's a physical twisted pair wired daisy chain between machines.
Yeah.
It's rugged. And through that wire, you're pulling fault codes, voltage logs, current logs, everything the machine's internal brain thinks is happening.
I feel like that distinction is going to be important later.
It is crucial because you then have to verify what the machine thinks against reality using manual tools. DC and AC clamp meters. You physically clamp a sensor around the wire to measure the current flow. You are fact-checking the computer.
Are we done with this list yet? It's a lot.
Almost. You have to verify wire sizing. Did the installer actually use the right gauge wire for this current? And finally, the environmental sensors. The pyranometers.
Pyranometer. That is a great word.
It is. It measures solar irradiance, the actual raw power of the sunlight hitting the earth measured in watts per square meter. And you'll usually have anemometers for wind speed because wind cools the panels, which changes the math again.
Wow. Okay. I stand corrected. This is not a guy with a clipboard. This is a massive data ingestion operation.
It's an avalanche. And this brings us to the core problem Alexis Lewis highlights. Why is field inspection so hard? Because individually, each one of those data sets tells a partial story.
What do you mean by partial?
Imagine you're a doctor. The thermometer is in one room. The heart rate monitor is in another building. And the blood test results are on a fax machine in the basement.
It's totally disconnected.
The pyranometer says it's sunny. The inverter says I'm working. The drone sees a hot spot on row 4. But unless you put them all together instantly, it just looks like noise.
And I imagine for a human being, standing on a hot roof, trying to correlate 20 different variables in their head,
yeah,
that's just impossible.
It's cognitive overload. A human, no matter how expert, struggles to hold that many variables simultaneously to find a subtle pattern. We are good at the obvious stuff. Oh, that wire is melted.
Right.
We are bad at the subtle stuff. This efficiency curve is 2% off what it should be given the wind speed and irradiance.
And this is where the connector comes in. Uh-huh. This is where the AI enters the chat.
Correct. This is the pivot point. The AI doesn't replace the clamp meter. It doesn't replace the drone. It connects them.
So walk me through the process. We have this pile of data, the symphony. What does the AI actually do with it that a spreadsheet can't?
So the process described in the notes involves structuring these inputs. You take the wind, the wire size, the RS-485 data, the pyranometer readings, all of it, and you feed it into a local AI model.
When you say local, does that mean it's running on a laptop on a roof? Or is this going up to the cloud?
It can be edge computing on site or process for that site's digital twin in the cloud. But the key is that you feed it that real-time data alongside the expected performance models.
The what should happen versus what is actually happening.
Right. But here is the big distinction the text makes. Humans look at a snapshot.
I am here. It is Tuesday. The green light is on.
Exactly. System looks good right now. Yeah. But the AI model evaluates patterns over time. Weeks, months. It doesn't just ask, is it working? It asks, is the performance drifting?
Drifting. That implies a slow, creeping failure.
Which are the absolute worst kind. The model returns an operational summary that answers three specific questions. First, is performance drifting or is it stable? Second, which anomalies are persistent issues and which are just noise?
That's huge, because sensors glitch. Right. A bird lands on the pyranometer for 5 minutes. You don't want to dispatch a truck for that.
Precisely. You need to know if it's a blip or a trend. And the third question, Are the losses consistent with heat, weather, or installation factors?
Basically, is it physics or is it broken?
Yes. Is the system producing less power because it's incredibly hot out, which is physics, or because a connector is corroded, which is a failure?
We interrupt this podcast with a quick reminder. Solar systems that aren't inspected don't perform as designed. Annual inspections protect output, safety, and payback. Wadadley Solar LLC, serving the U.S., Antigua, Guyana.
Can we make this concrete?
Yeah.
Because grift and anomalies are great buzzwords, but what does this look like in the field? The source material had a specific example called the Delta Analysis.
Yes, the Delta Analysis. This is the detective story part of it.
Okay, set the scene. I'm the technician. What am I looking at?
Okay. You are doing a CPE audit, a comprehensive project evaluation. It's a beautiful day. You check the pyranometer. It is reporting strong sunlight, 1,000 watts per square meter. That is peak sun.
So fuel tank is full. We have maximum energy hitting the roof.
Correct. Then you look at the watt node production CT. This is the meter measuring what's actually leaving the system. It shows 50 kilowatts.
Okay, I don't know the system size, but let's assume for this story that 50 kilowatt is as low for that amount of sun.
Significantly low. We should be seeing much, much higher numbers. So you have high potential input, low actual output. Something is wrong.
So naturally, I go to the machine that makes the power. What does the inverter say?
And that's the problem. You check the inverter via that RS-485 connection,
yeah.
And the inverter says, no faults, operating normally, status, green.
It's gaslighting us.
In a way, yes. Ideally, the inverter should be screaming, but it's not.
So a human technician sees this. What do they do?
A human might just scratch their head. They see the green light. They might think, well, maybe the pyranometer is calibrated wrong. Maybe the meter is glitching. Maybe it's just one of those things because the main piece of equipment isn't complaining.
Right. If the check engine light isn't on, the car must be fine. We are conditioned to trust the dashboard.
Exactly. It's very hard for a human to override that green light bias, but the AI doesn't have that bias. It performs the correlation. It pulls in the module temperature. It looks at the inverter status. It looks at historical output for the specific time of year, and it looks at the sensor deltas.
And what's the verdict? What does the AI find that the human missed?
The diagnosis in the text is incredibly specific. It says, irradiance is ideal. Inverter reports no faults. Module temperature is within range.
So it's not overheating?
No. So the AI concludes, loss pattern is consistent with heavy soiling or a string level issue not visible at the inverter.
Soiling. That's polite industry speak for dirty.
Right. Very dirty. We're talking caked on dust, pollen, maybe bird droppings covering a significant portion of the array. Or a specific string of panels has been unplugged.
Oh, wait, why didn't the inverter catch that? If a whole string is unplugged, shouldn't it know?
You would think so. But the inverter is a big, dumb machine. It just takes whatever DC power comes into it and flips it to AC. If the input drops, it just assumes, oh, must be a cloudy day. It doesn't have eyes. It doesn't look up at the sky and say, hey, wait a minute, the sun is out.
That is the disconnect. The inverter knows what it is doing, but it doesn't know the context of the world around it. The pyranometer knows the context, but not the production.
And the AI connects the two. It says, hey, the sun is bright, but the power is low. That is a contradiction. It identifies the problem that doesn't trigger a standard hardware alarm.
That's fascinating. It really is a connector. It connects the weather report to the electrical report.
And this leads us to a really important concept in these audits, the source of truth. You have to trust something. And according to Alexis Lewis, in a CPE audit, the watt node meter is that source of truth.
Why that specific meter? Why not the inverter's data? I mean, the inverter is the smart device.
Because the inverter is reporting software data. It's reporting what it's trying to do. The watt node is a high accuracy energy meter. It bridges the gap between the physical flow of electricity, what's actually moving down the copper wire, and the digital monitoring.
So the inverter is telling you its intentions. The watt node is measuring the physics.
Correct. Software can have bugs, data transmission can have latency, but the physics of electricity don't lie. If the meter detects 50 kilowatt, it is 50 kilowatt.
I feel like there's a broader lesson there about data in general. We trust screens way too much.
Always verify with the physical layer, but I want to give you one more example from the notes because I think this one is even cooler. It's about predictive maintenance.
Why very kind? Fixing it before it breaks.
Exactly. So imagine you have two inverters sitting next to each other, inverter one and inverter two. They are running under the exact same conditions. Same sun, same wind, same electrical load.
Identical twins.
And on the dashboard, their output looks identical. They're both pumping out power. Green lights everywhere.
So the human walks past them and says, looking good.
Correct. But the AI is monitoring the internal telemetry, and it notices a tiny drift. Inverter 2's internal temperature is rising 10% faster than inverter 1's.
Now, 10%. Is that enough to trigger an alarm?
No. And that's the key. Let's say inverter 1 is running at 40 degrees Celsius. Inverter 2 is at 44 degrees. Both are well within the safe operating range. The red light won't turn on until it hits, say, 60 degrees.
So the dashboard says normal. The human hand test says warm, but fine.
But the AI looks at the rate of change in the comparison between the twins. It asks, why is twin B running hotter than twin A given identical conditions?
It's not about the absolute temperature. It's about the relationship. Yeah,
exactly. And because it spots that discrepancy, the AI flags it. Clogged intake filter or failing cooling fan.
And it catches it weeks before the meltdown.
Before the shutdown, before the IGBTs melt, before the downtime. You send a technician out to change a $20 filter pad instead of replacing a $5,000 circuit board next month.
That is the definition of ROI right there.
And the host calls this correlation at scale. It's not magic. It's just math and pattern recognition, but done at a speed and depth that we just can't match manually.
It's funny because we started this conversation talking about fear. The fear of the technician being replaced. But everything you've described, none of this works without the human.
Not at all.
I mean, the AI can say it's a clogged filter, but the AI doesn't have thumbs. It can't change the filter.
And the AI can't install the Watt node correctly in the first place to get the data. It can't verify if the pyranometer is actually clean or if a bird is sitting on it.
That's a good point. If the sensor itself is compromised, the AI is flying blind.
Garbage in, garbage out. This reinforces the main point of the source material. AI is useful only when it's grounded in field inspections. It validates the dirty boots work. It doesn't eliminate it.
It actually makes the field work more valuable. Because now, when you go to the site, you aren't wasting 4 hours playing guessing games.
Exactly. You aren't looking for a needle in a haystack. The AI hands you the coordinates of the needle. It turns the technician into a surgeon. You go exactly where the problem is.
So, zooming out a bit, what does this mean for our listener? Maybe they don't work in solar. Maybe they work in logistics or healthcare or retail.
I think the lesson is universal. Data is useless without context. We are all drowning in data, emails, reports, metrics. But unless you have a way to correlate that data to connect the sunlight to the inverter, it's just noise.
You need to look for the delta, the difference between what should be happening and what is happening.
And you need to trust the physical reality, the source of truth, over the dashboard. Just because the computer says everything is fine doesn't mean it is.
That is a life lesson right there. Just because the spreadsheet says the project is on track doesn't mean the building is on fire.
Verify with the clamp meter. Always.
I love it. But, you know, this raises a really provocative question for me as we wrap up.
Let's hear it.
We usually think of AI as something that dumbs down a job. You know, just follow the computer's instructions. The algorithm knows best. But in this case, interpreting the AI seems to require more knowledge. Not less.
That's a sharp observation.
Because to use this tool, you have to understand why the AI thinks it's a clogged filter. You have to understand the physics of the pyranometer. If you're just a checklist follower, you won't know what to do with the delta analysis.
You're absolutely right. If you don't understand the system, you can't interpret the diagnosis.
So here's the thought. Does the future of manual labor actually require more critical thinking? Are we moving from a world of rote tasks to a world of data interpreters who also happen to know how to use a wrench?
The blue-collar scholar, or maybe the augmented technician. It seems like that's where we are heading. The tools are getting smarter, so the hands holding them need to get sharper, too. The value shifts from, I can lift this heavy thing, to, I understand what this complex system is telling me.
That is a fascinating shift. It gives me a lot of hope, actually. It's not replacement, it's evolution.
Evolution is a good word for it.
Well, on that note, I'm going to go check my own internal sensors.
Mm-hmm.
I think my caffeine levels are drifting dangerously low.
That sounds like a persistent anomaly.
It really is. Thanks for diving in with us today. It's been illuminating.
Always a pleasure. Keep questioning the data.
See you next time on The Deep Dive.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you found this podcast useful. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out to us at info@alternativesolutions.az. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to tune in for future episodes.